you're probably hit with this as well. I go to conferences and you now hear things like, I'm an AI product manager. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
So, I mean, AI is dominating the landscape, and I'll tell you, it has a ton of potential. It's really going to see how this shapes out. But I think there is so much opportunity to incorporate AI into people's products to where it's either going to solve a need people never knew they had till they saw the solution, or it's going to take some age-old problem that everyone's wrestled with, and someone will use AI to create a new way to solve that problem. It's going to be like, whoa, that's really cool.
Welcome to Innovation Talks. Join us weekly as we discuss with distinguished industry guests how to refine and improve corporate innovation and new product development. Hosted by Paul Heller, Sophion Chief Evangelist.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I hope you're having a great week. My guest today is John Mansoor. And for those of you who followed the podcast for a long time, you might remember him. He was one of my earlier guests. But John is the founder and managing partner of a company called Proficience. And he's a product management and product marketing trainer, coach, thought leader. He's out there in the circles talking and writing about it. So, John, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Paul. Nice to be here again.
How are things going
and
for you?
We've updated, did a little rebranding since last time around. We're now Product Management University.
Oh, even better name. Okay. Product Management University. Tell me about that.
It was Proficience has been a great run for us for about the last 10 or 11 years. But I think at some point, the market changes out there and your name just has to be more representative of what you do and what your core competence is. And so we just went to Product Management University. Actually, funny story. I tried to trademark that name when I founded the company in 2001 and couldn't get the trademark or service mark. Tried it again about 2011 or so. Still couldn't get it. So I made another run at it in 2021. I guess they figured since I've been using it for 20 years, what the heck? So they gave it to me.
Wow, fantastic. I can't believe that's such a great name. If you think about it, it's like the ideal name for what you do. And to be able to trademark it, awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
So tell us about what you do at Product Management University.
So we educate product managers. That's our core business. And then adjacent to that is the product marketing, pre-sales, and customer success discipline. So I think the common denominator amongst all those is they're all customer-facing functions. And one of the biggest challenges most organizations, large, medium, and small, have is adopting a common view of the customer across those disciplines to where we all do our part to make the customer successful, right? So we have to build products to make them successful. We have to know how to market and sell those products. And then we have to help customers adopt and use those products and nurture them going forward, all with that common view. In a nutshell, that's what we do.
Yeah. And I'm thinking my experience in talking with a lot of companies is, I don't want to say silos. It's not that strong, but there are gaps. There are gaps between those various functions you just mentioned. Each one is tuning itself to do its function very well.
Yeah.
But then there does seem to be something missing between them. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Absolutely. And I think it's always been that way, that as time goes on and we become more sophisticated and customer-centric philosophies become more the thing, those silos, separate sort of operating as islands out there, they seem to be coming more and more together because I think everyone realizes the impact it can have when we all see the customer the same way.
Yeah.
For example, like product management is going to release some new features. Customer success on the other end can certainly help adoption of those new features because they're the ones out there talking to the customers every day. And so I think just one example of how they can work together to get a better end result for everybody.
Sure. And tell us about the type of companies you work with. Are they big startups? Are they, you know, what type of companies like an ideal customer for you?
Sweet spot is going to be, I'd say, from a revenue standpoint, somewhere between 50 million and a billion. Although, like everybody, we have customers on both sides of that. And they are primarily in the high tech software SaaS space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems to be a pretty good spread. And is it mostly in North America or do you get outside of North America?
We get all outside of North America, have been for quite a while, all over the world. In a lot of cases, they are companies that are probably based in the U.S. for the most part and have global operations, but more than a handful of companies who are based elsewhere that have big U.S. operations too.
Yeah. You're probably watching and experiencing how product management is changing. It's really coming into its own. One is on the software or the technology side, but then there's the other product companies that want to model the great things about product management. So let's talk about product management. What does good product management look like?
Boy, these days it all depends on who you ask, right?
Yeah, okay.
To me, I'll start with the end game. I mean, a good product management process to me is one that within your company, all your stakeholders are on board with. Okay, so whether it's engineering, sales, marketing, customer experience, your executives, back office operations, I think it has to be something that all of your stakeholders are on board with. And to get to that point, I think it has to be something that's, in relative terms, pretty simple and straightforward, something that everybody understands, and it has to be consistent. It can't be idea of the month one day and process to get a product to market the next day and things like that. So I think you got to be really consistent with how you practice it as a company, as an organization.
Yeah. Do they write it down? When I think about a process, I always think about you have to have a process that's documented, understood, consumable. Is that a gap right now, or are companies writing it down? When they create a process, what's involved?
Boy, that's a tough one. So a lot of companies do document it. And getting back to the simplicity thing, the companies that document it, the document is going to be fairly healthy or hefty, which means then people don't look at it or read it or consume it or understand it, or a lot of people don't. I won't say everyone.
Okay. Yeah.
So I think it is a good idea to document it so that people can refer to it, have it out there, publish it so that everybody understands what it is and how it works. Mm-hmm. But I think that has a usability aspect all on its own, is how you publish what your product management process is and how people have access to it and can they understand it. So I think there's a whole element of that there. But then to me, it's a combination of simple best practices that are going to vary from organization to organization, depending on the products and the markets you have. There are some basics there that it's just a matter of documenting. Here's how we do market research. Here's how we do customer discovery. Here's how we decide what is priority on the strategy and the roadmap, things like that.
Yeah.
But still keeping it fairly simplistic and straightforward. And since you're in the business, you know this as well as anyone. Our profession has matured in great ways, more than I ever thought I would see it. But with that maturation is a lot of fragmentation. So there is a framework for every little fragment of product management out there. So I think if I were coming into product management today, I might be a little overwhelmed personally because I'd be like, where do I start? Which one of these things is best for me? How does this thing map to that thing? Do these things work together? Are there conflicting issues with these two things I'm trying to do? I have to sort all that out.
Yeah, that's not so easy. What would you advise a person coming in to kind of navigate that landscape?
My motto is always to keep it simple. I've never met anyone who didn't like simple. And so what I can say is, when you think about all these different frameworks that all have a ton of merit, I would say that the thing that I think a lot of people have to realize is, if I just take this framework and I use it as published, that might work fine, but it's still part of a bigger process.
Yeah.
In other words, I can't take a discovery framework or a roadmap framework and take it down to 9 decimal points in accounting terminology here, because then it becomes too complex to where I'm ignoring the rest of the big picture here. Sure. So to me, it's both of those are important things, but I think you have to decide at some point, if I get more detail than this, the benefit becomes marginal.
Yeah.
So that's how much of this do I adopt where 80% of the value is there, and that's good enough for me to orchestrate the process.
Yeah. And I think it's very similar. We were talking about documenting, and it's very similar. You need enough definition of it that could be consumed by the other stakeholders. As you said, if sales is saying, hey, I don't understand how we make a decision around this place. You don't want that to happen. So it needs to be clear enough. But, and I think, John, are you seeing organizations experiencing turnover where new product managers are coming in and they kind of got to learn the process of the place and, or kind of, are you seeing a lot of that?
This is really interesting because for as long as I've been in this profession, which goes back to my practitioner days, more than 20 years, I don't think turnover is any worse than it's ever been. I think product management for some people is sort of a pass-through career. Mm-hmm. And then they use that experience and literally you can go in any direction with a good product management career in your foundation somewhere. So I don't think turnover is significantly more or less than it ever has been. I think the types of people coming into product management is what has changed over the years.
Yeah. Okay.
So I can remember when, if you didn't come from a customer facing role, you would not even be considered a candidate. Now I see things out on social media that says, what technical or coding skills do I have to get a product manager job? Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
To which my answer is always, please don't have coding skills to be a product manager. You'll tell be your own worst enemy.
Yeah. I mean, tell me more about that. Why do you think that? Because I've been in conferences where that question is always asked.
Yeah.
Why does that keep coming up?
So I think the vast majority of people coming into product management or want to start a career in product management are coming from technical backgrounds. Tons and tons of software engineers want to be product managers. So okay. I think you have, over the years, the technical influx into product management roles has become more and more. So I think the comfort zone of a software engineer is how things work, where the comfort zone of customer facing professionals is more, what do I need to help my customers get better at doing? Why is that valuable to them? Why can't they get there? How do we help them? I would say the who, what, and why perspective versus the how perspective is what's shifted.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. You're probably hit with this as well. I go to conferences and you now hear things like, I'm an AI product manager. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
So, I mean, AI is dominating the landscape, and I'll tell you, it has a ton of potential. It's really going to see how this shapes out. But I think there is so much opportunity to incorporate AI into people's products to where it's either going to solve a need people never knew they had till they saw the solution, or it's going to take some age-old problem that everyone's wrestled with and someone will use AI to create a new way to solve that problem. It's going to be like, whoa, that's really cool. So I think that's good. Now, the other thing what I can say, because I've been through several of these, was through the whole web transformation and video, then mobile, and now we have AI. So I think all of them, when they were in their infancy, people started building roles and processes around the technology. There used to be like, I'm the web product manager for our web applications. Okay. I saw that back in the early 2000s, late 90s. And then you saw that with mobile, right? Yeah. I'm the mobile product manager. We saw that mid-2000s there when mobile became the hot platform. So I think we're seeing it again with AI. So I think then once AI is mature and people are comfortable knowing what it is and what it isn't, how to use it, how it's not, then AI will just become part of our technology stack and our platform. And you won't see as many product titles with AI product manager because AI is going to be part of the plumbing.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, we just got to get through this cycle of hype and then disappointment and then, right?
I'll say the one good thing about AI I have not seen so far. Do you remember when mobile apps became the thing and companies created a mobile app just to say they had one?
Yes.
And it was utterly worthless?
Yeah.
Paul, here's an app. You can view your name and address. What am I going to do with that?
Yeah.
I have not seen AI or companies using AI just to say we're doing AI. Everyone who's announcing some AI capabilities, they actually do something worthwhile. I'm thrilled to see that.
That is great. Yeah, I remember the mobile thing as well. It was more of a marketing statement or a competitive statement to say, yeah, we got one, right? Checklist type of thing. And what value it had was a good question. So I'm glad to hear you say that you're seeing coming out of AI is actually providing value. That's good.
Yeah, it is. And I think understandably, we've all been in this. Valuations, a lot of company valuations, whether you're public or privately held, if you don't say you have it, people assume you don't, and you can be falsely accused of being a laggard.
Yeah. And this has always been, I think, as you said, a challenge for product managers is to deal with the corporate push on whatever the technology is, right? I'm thinking of the non-tech world, but when agile, you see product companies that make physical products saying, oh, but we have to be agile. They don't even know what it means yet, but they say they have to be. So as product managers, you always have that thing coming to you either from the board or from the CEO or from the salespeople, wherever. This is, you got to do this.
It is. And I always encourage my product managers to keep AI in perspective of what it is, right? AI is how we are going to help customers get something done that was either impossible or very difficult to do so much that it didn't even mess with it, right? So AI is still the how part of the equation. It just happens to be like something new in our tool belt that was going to be more beneficial than maybe some other technologies.
Yeah.
It's keep the value eye on AI and don't just do it for the sake of using AI as a technology. And then the manufacturing thing is very interesting because I've done training for a handful of manufacturing customers, quite a few over the years. And when they got on the Agile bandwagon, I said, let me give you folks some good news. You've been Agile from the start. You just didn't realize it. And they look at me like, what are you talking about? I said, here's one thing, companies that manufacture a physical product, here's one thing you've always done. You have to do it, is you have to build prototypes and you have to you have to vet these things with your would-be customers, right? You build a prototype, you refine it, you do another one. And then you get it to a point where customers say, okay, yes, I would use this and I would pay for it. Then you put it through manufacturing. Okay, you're not doing 2-week sprints like we do in the software world.
Yeah.
But to me, Agile is you're iterating toward making sure the product has value before you take it to the market. So to me, manufacturers have been much more Agile, much longer than software companies.
Yeah, that's a fascinating perspective.
And here's the other enormous thing about Agile in our software world that I think we have forgotten about because of the pace of it. And this is to me a shortcoming of product management and how we bring it back into the fold, certainly up for debate. I think as we have gone agile, there's less customer validation on what we're doing.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. I mean, I can remember back when I was probably in my first 5-6 years as a product manager. We didn't call it agile back then. It was just called iterative development. So we were doing, our sprints were about 6 weeks. So at every 6-week interval, we would put the product in its current state in front of customers, walk them through, okay, here's how you're going to do an invoice or receive a purchase order, whatever the case was, and walk them through that and let them tell us that part's great. That part, tweak this, move this over here, do this. And we would go through probably 2 to 3 iterations with customers before we went into the final build so that we weren't building throwaway code. Now, so the development was agile, but we were doing waterfall release because we had this huge platform and everything was integrated. So we couldn't release necessarily in piecemeal for big releases, small releases we could. But I think I hear so many of my clients say that customers don't see stuff before they actually put it into the production environment.
Wow. Yeah. I know there's a lot of people that look at Scrum and say, probably some people still say it's good, it's necessary. There's a lot of people who say it's caused a lot of harm. It's interesting to look at the splits on that. But I know of an example where an organization was just really running through the tickets and they had so many tickets that never would talk to a customer. It's like somebody must have talked to the customer when they wrote this story down. But I'll just do what it says and move on. Mindless, like robotic development. It was horrible to see.
And in extreme cases, I was teaching a user story workshop out in Orange County maybe 3-4 years ago, more than that because COVID was 3 years ago. Okay, let's say 4 or 5 years ago. And two people, there were about, I don't know, there were maybe 35, 40 people in the class. Two people in the same class, two product managers said, we are not allowed to talk to customers.
Wow.
So
you must have been,
you know,
just
it runs
speechless.
The gamut. That is rare. I will tell you that is rare.
Yeah,
most
yeah.
companies are like product managers. You need to spend more time with
right.
customers.
Correct.
At the other end of the spectrum, it's you're not allowed to talk to customers.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting thing. Let's talk about that a little bit. You mentioned the different organizations of pre-sales, the customer success and the product manager, all customer facing, but you know, product managers, they need to get, who was it said, get out of the office? You need to get out of the office. You need to talk to the customers, but then you have this mountain of stuff that you also need to do. It's not so easy. What would your advice be for somebody to, what's a good day or a good week in terms of organizing all this work that product managers have?
My philosophy on that is the mountain of stuff you think you have to do isn't as big as it looks if you spend more time with customers, because if you spend more time with customers, you really have a good perspective on what's important to them. Then you look at your mountain and you go, 3/4 of what's on my mountain just isn't that important.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Isn't that something? Yeah.
And so to me, I think that the number one thing I always tell people going into product management, the number one skill you need to perfect is how to interview and talk to customers and do discovery.
Okay. Okay.
And I think we still have a lot of opportunities as a profession there. So I'll give you a good example. So last week, a client I've had for 10 years now, they have me facilitate their annual advisory board meetings with their customers.
Oh.
Which I love doing, because there's always a jaw-dropping moment or two in these meetings where you find out something and people go, seriously. So I'm doing this last week. And so my client has a bunch of things they want to know from their customers. But I look at their list of questions. I said, folks, we may be putting the cart before the horse. So their line of questioning was more product discovery, which is how would I design this feature? I said, before we get into that, let's back up and make sure that the thing you want to improve is something that is important for them to improve.
Yeah.
And we found out in a few cases that they weren't as high a priority as my client thought they were. So one example was, so we were talking about reporting and data-driven decisions and analytics and all this kind of things. I asked the group, what kind of information, if your department had it, right? I talked about the role first. I said, what kind of information, if your department had at their fingertips, would improve the performance of your department to where it would be perceived as adding more strategic value to the company? So we had a great discussion around that. And then here's someone dropped the bomb, and then everyone else agreed with it. They said, data-driven decisions are not a thing in our industry yet. Egos still rule the day. So you guys could build the perfect analytics data-driven decision engine and give it to us. Nobody would use it.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love people yeah. like that in meetings who cause you to say, whoa.
Yeah. And it was like, wow. And then it was like, so we had this discussion. It was like the people and my clients' customers are clothing retailers and clothing designers, right? You still, I guess, have a lot of people in that industry who think they have the best ideas.
Okay.
And we're going to move forward with those. And we're not going to look at sales history and consumer feedback on similar product.
Got it. Yeah.
Well, not going to do much of it.
That's it. If you think about, you're the product manager and you've got to get out and talk to the customers, but you also have other people in your company who are talking to customers. As you mentioned, customer success, sales, right? They're all hearing things from customers as well. How do you ignore them? Do you include them? How does that work from a process standpoint?
You do include them because those are valid data points. So I think, and this gets back to what makes a good product management process. And this is why we focus on those four disciplines, because the common denominator across all of them is a consistent way to do customer discovery.
Okay.
So anytime you're with a customer or prospect, if we all use the same techniques to do discovery, then the data coming in is going to, you'll be consistent in terms of the context you're bringing back in terms of what customers want to do and why and what they're asking you for. All of those data points are great feedback. Product management has to have a way to bring those in. But I always tell product management, it is part of your job, because it's no one else's job, but it is part of your job to understand the market and the customers better than everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because everything intersects with the product. So if you understand the market and the customers better than everyone else, and all of those disciplines are going to help you, right? Then when they bring information to you, you can put it into the big picture and say, oh, that's a great idea. We never thought of that. Or, yeah, that's important, but it's not as important as everything else we're working on based on the 25 customer advisory board that we have.
Yeah. And then you need to be able to explain it back to those groups who discovered it and thought it's really important. It's maybe you got to be able to communicate back in a way that they feel respected, heard, listened to, and that they understand. Yeah. Okay. I see. I'm down on the list a bit. I get it. I subscribe to that.
And I think, you know, the most important thing here, and this is the hardest thing for anyone in any product company to do when it comes to discovering, it doesn't matter what role you're in, it's hard for all of us to do, is to, when you're doing customer discovery, do it as if your products and your company don't exist.
Really? Yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise you're leading the witness.
You're biased. Absolutely. You know,
it's like me saying, Paul, tell me what your biggest problems in product management are.
Yeah.
Whatever problems you have in product management may not be on the A list of things that are important to your company.
Yeah, fair enough.
And so there, it might be, it's, yeah, that's it, but we have a bigger issue with our pre-sales demos or this or that. It's, oh, okay. So let the opportunities, just let customers talk about what's important to them. And there's going to be a play there for you somewhere. You just have to understand where and where it is relative to their priorities. I think that's the context a lot of us miss, is we assume that the problems that customers have that we can solve are their biggest problems. And that's not always the case.
Yeah, that's was a common theme through our discussion here, that assumptive type of way of working, which is dangerous. Yeah. Yeah.
It is. And I empathize with people. I came from a customer background into pre-sales, and I went into product management. So I had that customer perspective, but literally a couple of years into product management, you don't realize how much you lose it. Mm. And I have less of an excuse than anyone, because I used to be a customer, and now I'm forgetting about the customer perspective. It's hard to keep that top of mind and just talk to customers and don't assume anything when you're having those conversations.
Yeah, great. We've covered a lot of ground here today, John. Reflecting back, did we miss something? Is there something you'd say, Paul, we should have talked about this? We covered a lot of ground.
I think my words to everyone, or my inspiration to everyone, is product management in relative terms is pretty simple. I mean, once you understand who your target customers are, which means let's figure out where we can succeed best over the course of time, understand what's most important to them and why they can't get there, and then build all your product and your roadmap and everything around eliminating obstacles so they get the outcomes. And I think if you take that approach to it, 99% of the time, if it has value to the customer, it has value to your organization, and you'll be able to get it to the market in a way that brings that value back to you.
Yeah.
You know, I always tell people, start with value to the customer. If it's not valuable to the customer, nothing else matters. And I see too many companies that start with, let's figure out what our goals are, and now let's look at the products and see what we do to our products to meet our goals, which means customer value becomes secondary by default.
Yeah. I see a lot of that as well. Yeah. What's on the plate for Product Management University? Where are you hoping to take that?
I think our education over the years, it has evolved, and I think it just has to evolve further now to where one of the things I've seen in recent years is, I think as Agile continues to expand, it continues to bleed backward upstream into product management. So I think there's this maybe confusion. Agile is still a development methodology, and I think we need to remember that it is how you build great products, and I love it for all the things it does. Its strength is not understanding markets and customers to feed the development process. And so I think that's where there's a challenge. I think people who've only been in product management maybe 2 or 3 years, Agile and product management are probably synonymous.
Yeah, and a little confusing too. Oh, let's make a sprint and go study a customer.
Let's just go uncover some user problems and get them through the Agile factory, and we're good to go. And customer discovery ends with users. It doesn't start with them. And so there's that whole upstream piece that's not there in terms of strategy.
Great perspective. John, it's been a lot of fun. If people want to find out more about Product Management University or even connect with you, what are the best ways?
ProductManagementUniversity.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn.
Great. Great. Yeah, we'll have to check that out. I encourage everybody. And if you're, there'll be show notes that'll have this as well. We'll make sure you have your LinkedIn profile on there. But it doesn't get much easier than productmanagementuniversity.com.
Thank you. Yes, we try to keep everything simple.
John, thanks for stopping by, having a chat. Really enjoyed it. Keep
Same
up
here.
The great work. I've been a fan of yours a while, and I love watching where you're going. So really appreciate you stepping in and sharing some of your insights with us today.
Thank you very much. And right back to you folks at Sophion. You're doing some great things there.
Great. Thanks. I hope you all enjoyed that. Reach out to John and dialogue with him. Engage with him on LinkedIn if that's a platform you like, or check out the website. I think you'll find your time there worthwhile. Take care, everybody. Have a great week. Bye for now.
Thanks for joining us this week for Innovation Talks with Paul Heller. If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, or wherever you listen to podcasts. For additional information on today's topic, check out sophion.com, S-O-P-H-E-O-N.com, where you will find plenty of innovation-centric content and corporate best practices. If you'd like to discuss anything with Paul or would like to get in touch with the show, email us at talks@sophion.com.